American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
You're listening to the Raptors Rapture Podcast.
As Bon Jovi once famously said, "Whoa, we're halfway there. Whoa, living on a prayer." So that first part holds true for this Raptor season, as they're at the 41-game mark, winning 27, going 27-14, which is projecting them to have 54 wins on the season. However, the second part is starting to fade away. We're getting healthier. We're looking better. The team is looking like we expected them to look at the beginning of the season. On this episode, we are going to talk a little bit about how the Raptors have done in the 41 games that they've played. We're going to play a little bit of true or false. And with me to do that is Adam Corsair of the South to Six podcast. Adam, my man, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks, man. Happy to be here. And yeah, I can't believe the season is halfway over. That is crazy. I mean, you kind of reminded me of it before we went on air, but just to think that this Raptor season, rather, is halfway done, it's crazy.
It is fantastic. And to go 27-14 with the injuries that they've had and losing their best player last year with Kawhi Leonard, I think it's safe to say that this is a bit of a success story for the Raptors thus far.
I would say so. I would say that once that LA series happened at the beginning of the year on that West Coast swing, and, you know, people were dropping like flies, it's sort of been steady at that point in terms of injuries and how people have been missing time. But the Raptors have more than held their own, right? And I think a lot of people were holding their collective breaths here and saying, like, I wonder where the Raptors are going to finish. Are we now a seventh or an eighth seed? And lo and behold, we're still at the four. I think it speaks to the real resiliency of this team. I think it speaks to the coaching of Nick Nurse. I know we'll break this all down in a bit, but yeah, you got to be happy with the way they've been playing, and you got to be happy with how they've been performing, because it's been pretty outstanding.
Absolutely. And like you said, they're fourth in the NBA's Eastern Conference. I mentioned projecting them to win 54 games. Right now, they're sitting with the second best defense, which I feel like has been the case for like the past 5 or 6 weeks. They're just kind of holding down the second best defense in the league. And after last night's game against the Washington Wizards, they jumped from the 17th best offense to the 14th best offense. And like we talked about on your show last week, the rest of their schedule is pretty easy. So I wouldn't be shocked seeing the Raptors offense maybe get a little bit better, especially with the additions of Siakam, Gasol, and Norm Powell, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So now getting into a little bit of news, as we do every single week. The All-Star voting, as of Thursday, January 16th, came out once again. The voting ends on the 20th, so guys, go out and get voting for Siakam, Lowry, Van Fleet, anyone you want to see in the All-Star game from the Toronto Raptors. And with this return, Siakam jumped to second in the front court and overall voting in the East, which put him ahead of Joel Embiid. And he looks like he's a definite lock for the All-Star game, despite missing 10-plus games. And Lowry jumped up to fifth, but doesn't look like he'll be able to make up any ground. He's about 500,000 votes away from Derrick Rose, who is in that four spot. So he'll probably get in as a reserve, depending on how the coaches vote. And another return that kind of came out that the NBA put out this weekend or Friday, the Raptors are fourth in most jersey sales this NBA season. They had no players on the team in the top 10 of jersey sales, but as a whole, the Raptors are fourth. And this kind of goes into what our first topic of discussion is going to be about, Adam. The Raptors won the first ever NBA Team of the Year award. So I was going to look back and see if it's always the team that wins the NBA championship, if it's always the team that has the most wins in the regular season or whatever over that calendar year. But this is the first one ever. So this is a very new thing to discuss, and it's a new thing for the NBA to give an award for. Does this make last year's championship season even more impressive to you?
I think so. I think that, you know, given the fact that there's this wide array of recognition from the team when it comes to an award, like, I think it's special, right? And maybe it is sort of something like, hey, you can't not have your champions be the team of the year. You can't have the team that, you know, came out on top. it's sort of like reminiscent to the Christmas Day game, right? You have to have your champions on that game. So I guess in this way, you have to have your champions as the team of the year. But at the same time, the Raptors are deserving of it, right? And I think that it, with the impressive wins against the 76ers, with the impressive wins against Milwaukee, I think that in and of itself proved that this was a very fantastic team and one to be remembered. So, it makes it more impressive. It makes it more special, I think, as Raptors fans, that you can always chirp back to that and be like, yeah, we're, you know, team of the year. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And not only does it show like that they built a good product on the court, but also a like successful organization as a whole, that from the top down, you know, something is going right, and their business is going well, and their marketing is going well, and all that kind of stuff is leading to, I don't know whether it's more fandom or more recognition by the US media, just knowing how hard it is for a team from Canada to get recognized by the ESPNs or TNTs of the world. It's kind of pushing them in that right direction, and it's showing that not only are they getting recognized by like people in Canada, but also people around the league, and of a league that is growing at such a fast pace. It's like, it's a really good sign for the Raptors organization, and it shows how good MLSE has been and how successful they've been in really creating a successful organization and a successful kind of fan base, which is really cool. But does the award give you more confidence in the organization going forward?
I mean, this may sound counterintuitive, but no, because I have full confidence in them as it is. Right. Even without this award, I don't necessarily think my confidence was low or anything. I think that it's obviously very high, you know, especially since Masai Ujiri is steering the ship here. I don't know. I think the award makes it more like just proud. I'm proud of the team for being recognized, you know, at that sort of level, because this is something we have known for a very long time. And it took them until winning a championship for everyone else to discover this, it seems. But, you know, in terms of whether or not this impacts my confidence in the organization, no, not really. I think that this ship is steering correctly. I think that they know exactly what they want. And I think they know exactly how to get it, right? And whether that be trade or via free agency, this team is hungry and this organization is hungry. They have tasted what it is to be champions, right? And you saw the parade last year, the impact it has on the city, and not just the city, the entire country. I think that they want to maintain that sort of presence. They want to maintain that sort of success. So no, I guess counterintuitively, as I mentioned, this doesn't impact the way I feel about the organization. I have so much confidence in them as it is.
Yeah, I agree. And like it just kind of validates the success, and it validates the feeling of positivity that most people should have, at least towards the Toronto Raptors as an organization as a whole. But at the same time, like if other organizations are noticing and kind of recognizing what the team is doing right, you've got to think that players around the league are noticing the same thing. And the big free agents, whether it's a Giannis Antetokounmpo, obviously that's the big name out there, but any guys like that or the mid-level guys who might be looking to go to bigger markets might look at the Raptors and say, you know what, obviously they're doing something right. They've been doing something right for the past few years. Might entice free agents or people to give some more respect to the Toronto Raptors as a destination of sorts, which is kind of nice to think about.
I'm hoping that's the case, but I mean, the glaring black eye on that is Kawhi Leonard, right? Like if that's the case, Kawhi would have stayed, maybe would have stayed, but you know, maybe the being close to home is so impactful for him that, you know, we didn't stand a chance. I don't know. I don't really want to go down that rabbit hole again, but I do think that there are more eyes looking at the Toronto Raptors with respect and as a destination. Whether that be for, you know, front office members or whether that be for players, I do think now it's better to hope for free agent signings. And I think the Raptors have a much better chance than previous years. So in that respect, yeah, I think you're right.
So regardless of whether it improves our confidence, this was a really nice feat, and it was a validating award to win. As the Toronto Raptors, not only did they win the championship, but they're getting recognized for their success in business and ticketing and sponsorships and all that, all the stuff that fans generally don't care about. However, it's still nice to see, whether you care about it or not, it's still nice to see that title, best NBA team of the year. It's a pretty cool thing to see. We're going to move on from that topic, and we're going to talk about a couple of returns, as I mentioned from the top. Siakam, Gasol, and Norman Powell all returned from injuries after each missing about 10 games. In their absence, they were able to stay afloat. Which guys impressed you the most with the Siakam, Gasol, and Norm Powell injuries?
So I don't want to take away anything from any of the three. I think they're both, or rather all three of them, are pivotal pieces for this team's success. But I don't know, like, this may be, maybe it is the same as everyone else, judging from the tweets and how people are responding during games. But Norman Powell has been just so impressive. Right. And yeah. I think I lean on Norm in this respect, because with Pascal Siakam, we sort of expected this giant leap. And so seeing him play so well, yes, it's after an injury, but still seeing him play so well and so relaxed, it's sort of what we anticipated. So, like, it's business as usual when it comes to that. And this, the same vein as Marc Gasol, this is a vet. And I know he started off slow in the beginning of the year and people were like, well, he's playing drunk. He just looks so fatigued. I think, you know, with the combination of the rest due to the injury and just rest in general really benefited him. So he's playing much like the Marc Gasol we saw in the playoffs. But with Norman Powell, like, I don't know that we necessarily anticipated this level of play from him, and something that we rather just hope for. So now that we're seeing it being displayed in front of us with so much confidence, right, and so much, like, precision, how many times throughout the past couple of years have we seen Norman Powell, like, drive up for a layup and miss, or be so erratic with this finish that we're just like, yeah, it's Norman Powell, what are you going to do? I guess we're playing the Norman Powell drinking game and we get drunk by the second quarter. You know, but now it's he's playing like a brand new player, right? He's playing like a beast, like a sixth man of the year award candidate. So for me, Norman Powell has been by far the most impressive out of the three.
Yeah. And, you know, before the injury, everyone was noticing how well he was playing. He had a 33-point night against Orlando when everyone else kind of was shitting the bed. He had 23 against Miami in the same scenario where everyone else just wasn't really playing that well. 17 in Chicago, 22, 25, 26. You had all these games before the injury, and then all of a sudden he gets injured and in Detroit, and you're like, well, shit, is he going to be the same guy he was before that injury? And since coming back in the game against the Spurs, 20 points, in the game against OKC, 23, and the game against Washington, who, you know, he's basically playing against you and I out there, but yeah. 28 points for right, a game leading 28 points. And I mean, it's very encouraging that the rest did him well and that he didn't lose anything, because a lot of times in the NBA you see guys really hot before an injury, and then as soon as they come back they can't get back into their flow for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 games. And with the Raptors, I don't want to say struggling without all three of those guys, it's nice to see an offensive player come back in and be as effective, because we've seen with Siakam, he has been, outside of the first quarter against San Antonio, he's struggled a little bit offensively. He hasn't been as aggressive as maybe we'd like to see him. And we obviously have talked plenty about how Gasol's offense in terms of scoring hasn't really been there all season long, except for last night's game against the Wizards. He was probably the best guy on the court out there. But you're seeing this guy come in and be a spark plug off the bench and be a guy who can really, I don't want to say dominate offensively, because I think that might be too strong of a word, but as close to dominate offensively as you can expect from a guy like Norman Powell. So I'm there with you. I think Norman Powell has kind of, like, low key taken a bigger step than everybody is realizing. And there's one guy that I want to kind of shout out, while these guys have been injured, and that's Serge Ibaka. Just because, as I mentioned, the offense was struggling, and it's been a topic of conversation on this podcast pretty much the entire season, that the offense has been struggling. And one of the reasons as to why the Raptors were able to stay afloat and were able to put up, you know, 100 points a night was Serge Ibaka, averaging 18.1 points per game without Gasol, shooting 44% from three, 54% from the field. And, you know, defensively, he didn't have the same impact, but, you know, able to make his own impact on the defensive end, just, you know, with his IQ, maybe not being the same as Gasol, his rim protection, maybe not being the same as Gasol, but being able to to bring his own power and his own impact to the game was something that really helped this team going into those games where maybe he wasn't, maybe, you know, they weren't expected to have a really good defense or have a really good offense just because of all the people that they were missing. Is there a guy that with those guys out that you've really enjoyed watching that maybe isn't going to be getting the same playing time now that they're all back?
Yeah. Terrence Davis, yeah. For sure. You know, like we touched on this last week on my show, but, you know, after watching him last night, and again, it's against the Wizards, so how much stock can you really put into it? It doesn't seem like they're all trying. Maybe Isaiah Thomas is trying, but otherwise it doesn't seem like they're really giving that much of an effort. But Terrence Davis has just been a joy to watch. Right? He put up, I think it was a career high last night of 23 points. He finished with a plus 21. Ever since Nick Nurse roasted him, in front of everyone in a media scrum, he's just been hungry, right? And, you know, given the fact that, I mean, Fred VanVleet's supposed to come back tonight, I don't see the minutes being available for Terrence Davis unless something catastrophic happens. Knock on death, that doesn't happen. But this is a nice little cap to the little short trip of Terrence Davis that we've been seeing. He's been playing much better than Patrick McCaw. I don't think that's, you know, to the argument of anybody else listening to this right now.
Shocking.
Yeah, unless Nick Nurse is a regular listener to your podcast. Terrence Davis has been light years ahead of Patrick McCaw, but Patrick McCaw still seems to be getting these minutes. But hopefully that if there's going to be minutes to spare that aren't garbage time minutes, Terrence Davis is going to get these because, my God, he has been... This is an undrafted dude, right? You could say what you want about Patrick McCaw being a three-time champion. Sure, like no one's resting... I mean, putting this on the back of Patrick McCaw, but Terrence Davis is an undrafted guy, completely under the radar, and is just making noise. And it might just be in Toronto that he's making this noise, because I'm sure with other, you know, teams and other fan bases, he's sort of an unknown. But still, like, you got to admire the confidence. You got to admire the poise. You got to admire the determination of Terrence Davis to really, like, prove himself in the NBA right now.
Yeah, and... You know, we could talk about Terrence Davis all day long just because how impressive he's been, and how much of a pleasant surprise it's been to really watch him, and how strong he is on defense, and how impactful he is offensively at points, and just the effort he puts out there every single minute of the game is just a really nice thing to see. And I mean, I think it is going to be tough for Nick Nurse to really make decisions. I know he said last night after the game that he... You know, he can basically see himself giving minutes to 11 guys and giving, you know, 10 plus minutes to 11 different guys on the team, which, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to go about things. But at this point of the season, when the schedule is a little lighter and you have a back to back, I guess, in this scenario, you can really go out and you can experiment with lineups. You can experiment with certain players playing certain positions at different times. And we saw it in the past two games. Him playing the extra big lineup with Ibaka and Gasol. And I'm sure you're going to see more of that from Nick Nurse because, like we've said all year long, this team hasn't been healthy. What is this team going to be like when they are healthy? All this stuff. I think he's going to do the same thing he did last year, whereas he's just going to experiment. He's going to play certain guys with each other. He's going to play funky lineups to see how they work in different scenarios. He's going to probably play some really weird things that a lot of people on Twitter are going to hate and they're going to criticize him for, but that's just the type of guy Nick Nurse is. And hopefully that doesn't mean that Terrence Davis loses minutes to a Patrick McCaw or a Matt Thomas, or you can go down the line of guys. But, you know, if there's one thing that I think, if there's one guy that should really stay in the rotation, even though they are getting, you know, Fred VanVleet back, they just got Powell back and stuff, I think it is Terrence Davis, like you said, just because he is having that impact that you don't expect. And if anything, if he doesn't have a shot going, he's at least going to try hard, which is an impact in itself. So I really like that. So lastly, on this topic of these guys returning from injuries, are they now, and they being the Toronto Raptors, the favorite for that coveted second seed in the Eastern Conference?
I want to say, my heart wants to say yes. Like now that Philly is sort of like, taking a back seat because of the Embiid injury. And, you know, it doesn't look like they've had it all together to begin with, even with Embiid. I want to say yes, but like I'm hoping that a team like Miami falls down to earth, because it seems like the second half of their schedule, the second half of the year rather, looks to be a little bit more daunting. So maybe they'll, you know, take a step back. Boston has just been playing pretty well. So, you know, minus a couple games here and there this week, but Boston still has been playing rather well. I do anticipate them to be like maintain this pace and play just as well throughout the rest of the year. So the biggest obstacle you have in front of you is Boston as a Toronto Raptors fan. But let's not, you know, forget, like, the Pacers are still kind of coming out of nowhere. And with Oladipo coming back, like, they could make a lot of noise. You know, Brogdon's healthy and whatnot. So I want to say yes, but would it surprise me if they still hovered within that third or fourth seed? It really wouldn't. But given the fact that, you know, Fred VanVleet's coming back and we now have a fully healthy lineup moving forward, it's really tough to say. So, like, my heart wants to say yes, yes, absolutely, they're the second seed in this East, no problem. But, like, my head has these guessing games with these other teams, and I'm, like, trying to be analytical about it and trying to, you know, stay on even ground here. So I want to say yes, but it's possible that they don't. I know that's a terrible answer. You know, that's where I stand, I guess.
Yeah, I'm going to go with they should be the favorite, just because, you know, with the combination of their weak second half schedule, we've mentioned that a bunch on this podcast, these guys coming back, you know, the Siakam, they've been without him for a while. They're the VanVleets, who have been, he hasn't been out as long, but Gasol and Norman Powell, with them being back, I do think that Nick Nurse is going to play these guys, not necessarily into the ground the way that he was at the beginning of the season, but play them a considerable amount with not as much rest, just because I think they do know how important that second seed is going to be, because you're not going to be playing the Milwaukee Bucks in the second round of the playoffs. If you get that second seed, you're not going to be playing one of the top six teams, which are obviously a much tougher matchup than the Nets or the Magic, who are in the 7 and 8 seeds right now. I think they understand the importance of it, and they're going to gun for that second seed, because if the Raptors do make it to a conference finals this year, it is going to be one of the most impressive seasons that we've seen from this Raptors team, obviously outside of the championship, but with the expectations we had and with the loss of certain players and the loss of guys for 10 plus games, it is going to be a very surprising and shocking end to the season. And like you said, the Miami Heat are probably going to fall back just a little bit. I don't think they can keep it up. I've been saying that they're frauds all season long, and I mean, I have been wrong up to this point, so I don't think anyone should listen to me on that, I guess. The Sixers, obviously Embiid's out, but somehow they look better without him at points. The Celtics might fall back down to earth, and you know, the Bucks are probably going to win 70 games. Well, I mean, probably is maybe a strong word, but they're going to win about 66 to 67 to 70 games kind of thing. And there's no catching that one seed, but that second seed in the East is so important that Nick Nurse knows, and he will probably go for it. And they're going to play a lot just to get these guys back into rhythm and back into playing with each other, just because they really have only played, you know, two or three games fully healthy. And that is an important thing. And we know Nick Nurse too, like to play guys and like to work them back into rhythm. So I would be shocked if they didn't go for it. And if, you know, they did a little bit more of the quote unquote load management, like they did with Kawhi last year with a guy like Siakam or a guy like Gasol or Lowry or VanVleet, just because they've already missed so much time already this season.
Yeah, I would be surprised too. And, you know, it does speak to the importance of that, you know, at least a top four seed to have the home court advantage.
Yeah.
At least in the first round. So I don't think that's in jeopardy at all. Like, I don't see the Raptors falling out of fourth at, you know, the very worst. But yeah, I think that, you know, given the fact that this team has been, you know, semi rested, at least some of the main players due to injury, I think that was beneficial. And like you said, the ease of the schedule coming up, plus the All-Star break coming up, like, there is a lot of time in between that this team can get healthy, get rested. I think they're going to be just fine. And it wouldn't surprise me if they surged up to that number two spot. It really wouldn't.
And that would be a very, like I said, a very impressive way to end the season if they are able to, you know, maybe pull off another 27-14 record to finish out the season, maybe jump up to 30 wins and you know, kind of secure that spot in the second seed, because we all know how important that is, like I mentioned. So now we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get into our true or false segment of this one about the halfway point of this Raptor season. Stay tuned. And we're back. So now we're going to hop into the true or false segment here. It's going to be all about the Raptors team thus far. So the first true or false question here for you, Adam. True or false, this season has already exceeded expectations.
Oh, true. Hell yeah, true. In the beginning of the year, I did not anticipate this team playing this well, especially if you would have told me that they were going to have all these injuries sprinkled in the mix. I would have said they're doomed and they're going to be sellers at the deadline. I don't want to bury the lead there, but it definitely, no, yeah, definitely, yes, true, 100% true.
Do you think that even if they somehow lose in a first-round season, or in a first-round series, sorry, this is still the case?
No. If they lose in the first round of the playoffs, like, that is reminiscent of old Raptors. We set the standard, right? And I'm not saying that it's championship or bust. That certainly isn't the feel this year. But if we have a first-round knockout, because consider, like, we were just talking about if they finished as the second seed. Right. So if they finish as a second seed and they have to face like an Orlando Magic again or a Brooklyn Nets, like, to me, you should be winning that series no matter what. Like, that should be a given. You have to win that series. Now, if they lose out in the second round, sure, maybe like then I'm OK with it. But if you get eliminated in the first round, then the way I looked at this entire season has definitely flipped.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And even if they drop to the four seed and they have to play the Sixers in the first round, I think that might be a bit of a, I don't know if I want to go as far as say disappointment, but like with how they've played up until this point, and if they do end up somehow finishing in that fourth seed and having to play a Sixers team or a, I don't know, depending how far certain teams fall out, like if it's a Celtics team that fall to the five seed, or if it's the Pacers who jump up to the five seed, if they have to play them in the first round, I think it could go either way, no matter the matchup in that one. So I agree that it would be a bit of a disappointment, but if they do come out in a two seed and lose to a Nets or a Magic, then that is really bad. That would be a really bad look. So moving on to the second question, true or false, this Raptors team is more fun than last season's Raptors team.
False, because it was really fun watching Kawhi Leonard, but true in the sense that this team has been exceeding expectations. So that's really fun to watch, right? So it's kind of like a both scenario, but for sure it's, I'm just gonna say false, because last year was just a joy.
So I'm gonna disagree with you. I'm gonna say true to this year, just because, and this is the main reason, is because there's not that overlooking, is Kawhi Leonard gonna leave after every game, after every single time it snows, after anything that happens in Toronto. Is Kawhi going to leave? Is Kawhi going to stay? Oh no, Kyle Lowry missed three threes in this game. Is he going to leave? Oh no, Siakam only had five rebounds instead of his eight average. Kawhi Leonard's going to leave. Every single time that the Raptors went into a playoff series, it was, they have to win this or Kawhi's leaving. They have to make it to the finals or Kawhi's leaving. Whereas this one, like you said, it's all about the expectations, and it's all about, you know, all of our players are pretty much going to be playing this year just because they're health. Well, I mean, when they're healthy, they're all going to be playing. There's no load management. There's a lot of hard effort people, like we mentioned, Terrence Davis, Norm Powell, Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry, all those guys, although they might have been on the team last year, they're getting more exposure for the Raptors fans. And I think Nick Nurse is also able to experiment more. And that's also been a partly because of the injuries, but I mean, I think it's just like a feel good season, and you don't have the, like I said, the expectations of it's championship or bust, it's finals appearance or bust, or, you know, there's no looming, you know, doomsday kind of thing. Whereas last year, it was kind of always about, we have to look at what Kawhi Leonard's going to do in the offseason. Whereas this year, you can really just like appreciate what's going on in the moment. And you can appreciate how Siakam has taken a huge step, where I don't think we would have necessarily had that appreciation if he did it last year, where Kawhi Leonard was on the team. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I guess like the best way to put it is that it's certainly less stressful than
last
year.
Exactly. Sure. And like you said, though, like obviously a team making a championship run and being in the discussion for a championship run is the pinnacle of all fandom. So maybe, you know, if we didn't have that opportunity last year, if they didn't end up winning the championship last season, if they, you know, maybe they, Kawhi Leonard misses that shot and we get out in the second round, maybe it's a different feeling towards the season. And maybe last year's team was more fun because it felt more legit. But as of this year and having the championship under the belt, I think, you know, you're able to appreciate more stuff this year, which I think is like, I think that can't be understated, because, you know, there's guys like Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby who've taken a step, and we mentioned Norm Powell and all these guys. So like, that's the only reason I think this Raptors team is more fun. And then, you know, it'll just be getting more fun as they all turn into superstars in front of our eyes. So our third question here, Woj yesterday said that the Raptors are going to be looking to add a piece somewhere. He didn't say what type of player, who is in the running. He just said that they're going to be looking to make a move at the trade deadline. So Adam, true or false, the Toronto Raptors need to add one more piece to bolster their offense. Keyword, their offense, to be a real contender.
True, right? And we see these third and fourth quarter collapse games quite often. Like, just look at San Antonio. Look at the first game against OKC. They need a closer, for lack of a better way to put it. They need someone to, you know, really be the dagger in this offense, because a lot of the times those shots just aren't falling. We need a reliable person to really push this team into the right direction. Not that they're heading in the wrong direction, but they could definitely use the support. The only issue I have with it, though, that if you're going to get one of those killers, it's going to take someone to be removed from the Raptors squad that's valuable, that we find valuable right now, in order to get the deal done. So I'm thinking of guys like Norman Powell. I'm thinking of guys like OG Anunoby, that, you know, maybe even a Terrence Davis. Not that he's that impactful in terms of the future of this team, but like those other aforementioned two, you would definitely hate to part with guys like that, but if you really want to push your offense forward, you kind of need to give those types of players up.
Yeah, I agree. And like, so I'm saying true for this as well. It's just like, emotionally, I don't want it to happen, just because, like you said, you're going to have to give up somebody that we've kind of fallen in love with this year. As I mentioned in this team being more fun than last year's, it's just like, it's a feel good season, and everything seems to have gone right thus far with this team, and it's because of the guys like the Norm Powells or the Terrence Davis, the OGs, who would have to be dealt in a move to get someone who will really bolster the offense for the Toronto Raptors. And I don't know who they'll go for or what kind of player they're looking for, because they do have some relatively solid three-point shooting on the team already, and a Matt Thomas, and with Pascal Siakam shooting just under 40%, and OG had a really hot start not shooting the ball as well. But then you have Van Fleet and Kyle Lowry, which is essentially what a lot of teams are looking for these days in a bolster for the offense. And I just don't know where they're going to be looking to get an addition like that. Like, is it going to be a inside presence, someone who is a big man who might be a better scorer than a Serge Ibaka, or who might be a better scorer than a Marc Gasol, who can do things that they can't and open up the floor for the three-point shooters? Or are they going to look to obtain a guard to get the offense going? Or are they going to look to do all these other things? And I just don't know if you can really be so into that, just because we haven't seen this team healthy. So whatever this team has done thus far outside of the winning, you don't know if it's legit. Like, are they still going to struggle the same way when you have Siakam, Lowry, Van Fleet, Gasol and, you know, whether it's OG or Norm Powell or whoever is out there, Ibaka is out there, are they still going to struggle offensively? And I think you do need to see, and it's a good thing that these guys are coming back now and they still have about a month to kind of figure out, you know, what the real piece is that they need to be able to take that next step offensively. But we saw them in the first part of the season when, you know, when the Lowry injury occurred and when it was Lowry and Ibaka out, the team was still hovering around the 10th best offense. And when you have the second best defense, I don't know if you necessarily need a top five offense as well. I mean, it obviously, you're never going to say no, but is it going to take a piece that is going to hinder your defense? And that's kind of where I think that they shouldn't go and get a piece to bolster their offense.
I think it would, though, right? I think that's exactly what it would take. But the encouraging thing about that is that if being the second best defensive team, if you remove just one element of it, what would you consider the drop off to be? Like maybe they go from second to like fifth or sixth. Like, I don't know that that's necessarily that huge of a detriment in order to make like a nice postseason run. But you're certainly right when it comes to like having the team fully healthy. Like, yes, we have a decent amount of time, but when you look at it, I think the trade deadline's February 6th or thereabout. If it's February 6th, it's the 6th. So you have 10 games for a fully healthy team to figure this out. 10 games. That's not a large sample, right? And if you have these guys fully healthy for 10 games, Masai has a serious decision to make, right? And he needs to make like something that's a little bit more calculated than he normally would at the trade deadline because, you know, for as much as we like to complain about the offense for good reason, I still think the best course of action, even though I do think they are one player away to making like a substantial push, I still think the best course of action is to sort of sit on your hands and do nothing. Like, I know that sounds like really counterintuitive to Raptors fans, especially having this dialogue that you and I just did, but I don't know that you're removing players with like some sort of stability for the long term, like a Norman Powell and an OG and an Obi, is worth it. I really don't. And I really think that like if you have, because next year is like a huge question mark as to where this team is going to go and like what bodies will still be present. And if you trade away an OG and an Obi and or Norman Powell to get a deal done, that leaves so much uncertainty for next year as well. And I know people are like, no, let's not think about next year. Let's just focus on right now. But, you know, given the uncertainty of what's going to happen next year and into the 2021 season, I still think that's valuable to have some sort of certainty moving forward.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And going back to your point of like, if they lose a piece, are they really going to lose that much of a defensive capability going from maybe second to fifth or second to sixth? Like, what kind of player are you going to get where you're going to jump up from, I don't know, 14th in offense to what, like seventh? Is that what people are expecting? Because that's,
you're not
going to be, you know, like that's not going to happen. There's the offenses in today's NBA are just too good to jump from 14 to seven with just one move. And then it'll take even more out of your defense. And I think with this team, the identity has been their defense and has been the grit. And I don't want to say grit and grind because that's a Memphis thing, but that's kind of what they're doing as a team and as an organization as of right now, just because a lot of hard workers, a lot of guys who are trying to prove themselves in the NBA right now, whether it's Siakam who needs to make that leap or Gasol being the veteran who is trying to show that he's still got it. Same with Ibaka, same with Lowry kind of thing. So, I mean, yes, it would be nice to get somebody, but I don't know if there's somebody who is going to be impactful enough on the offensive end to really say, yeah, let's give up an OG or yeah, let's give up a Norman Powell, who, like you said, are relatively big parts of the future with this organization if they do stick around. So in theory, I like the idea, but in practice, it's probably not going to be that simple for us to really talk about, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
So moving on to our fourth question, second last here, true or false, Pascal Siakam is a top 10 player in the NBA?
My gut wants to say no. He's definitely, I think he's a top five in the East for sure. But like, are we talking only healthy bodies at the current moment or just the entire conglomerate of the NBA?
So I would say like this season. So like we know Kevin Durant's not playing this season. Steph Curry is, you know, not likely to play this season. So, like, guys who have played this season, and, like, you can throw a Joel Embiid in there kind of thing with that. But, like, I would say, yeah, more so healthy. Like, no KD, no Steph, those kind of guys.
Okay, then, yeah, I would put him in a top 10, right? Because, like, the obvious contenders in front of him are the Kawhi, probably PG, LeBron, AD. You put Embiid in front of him, and you can probably put Jimmy in front of him for the way he's been playing this year. But otherwise, like, you know, Luka is ahead of him. Giannis is ahead of him. So we're up to 8 right now. Yeah. I wouldn't put Tatum ahead of him personally. I wouldn't put Kemba ahead of him personally. Who else are you putting? Maybe Jokic you want to put in front of him?
Yeah, Jokic could be up there. Yeah.
That's 9? Maybe he's hovering right at that 10 spot. Like, it's really difficult because it depends on how you want to evaluate everyone else. Like, Harden, you putting Harden at 10 right now? Okay, so yeah, in that aspect, you're removing Siakam. It's really tough to say. So, you know, listing off those 10 right there, I kind of got to lean, no, he's not a top 10 or the top 10 player right now.
Yeah, and like, because Bill Simmons at the beginning of the, not really the beginning of the season, but like closer to, you know, 20 game-ish mark. I think it was 25 games. They talked about their top 10 players, and they had Pascal Siakam at number 7, which was, to me at the time, I said on the podcast, that it was a bit ridiculous because, you know, he's never been the best guy on a really, really, really good team. And he, despite having the impact of maybe one of the best guys on a really, really, really good team with the Toronto Raptors this season, you haven't seen him in a scenario where he's the best guy in a playoff series, or he's the best guy without a, you know, a guy as good as Kyle Lowry, as good as a second player as Kyle Lowry, and as good of a supporting cast as the Raptors have this season. So as much as I want to put him in the top 10 player kind of ranking, I think he's close to the conversation for it, like we said. But, you know, his average is 24.2 points a game, 7.6 rebounds, 3.6 assists on, you know, 45 from the field and 39 from three. Like, those are, you know, top 10 player numbers. And I think you should also look at how the fans are interacting with a Pascal Siakam type guy, in the sense that, like I said, he's the second most voted in the Eastern Conference. And I know the Eastern Conference isn't as stacked as a West, you know, with the LeBrons and the Lucas and all the guys that we mentioned there, but there's still Giannis, there's still Embiid, there's still Jimmy Butler. And I think a big thing about being a top X player, top 10, top 5, top 15 player in the NBA is the fan recognition and the fans wanting to watch you and the fans recognizing that you're really good, right? Because if it's all the analytic people and it's all the people who watch basketball for a living who are saying, yeah, Pascal Siakam's a top 10 player in the league, you can take that with what it is, and it probably means more. But when the general consensus is that, yeah, Pascal Siakam should be a starter in the NBA All-Star game, where, you know, they're posting Pascal Siakam highlights on House of Highlights, you know, it does kind of signify that he's at least close to the conversation for a top 10 player in the league. And he was in the MVP discussion for the first couple months of the season, and that was really cool. So, you know, he might not be in that top 10 player range, but he's definitely, you know, somewhere, if he's not in the top 10, he's somewhere in that, you know, 12 to 13 range probably.
Yeah. Like, do you put it this way and be honest? If the game is on the line right now, who on the Raptors do you want? Whose hands do you want the ball to be in on the Raptors to close it out, to like hit a game-winning shot? Who do you want to take in that?
Like, I want to say Siakam, because he's probably got the tools to do what he wants offensively. But I'm gonna go with probably a Kyle Lowry, which might be, you know, just because I think he's just been there, done that, and, you know, he is more composed probably than a Pascal Siakam, and he doesn't garner the more physical, more athletic players like a Siakam would.
Yeah, I'm saying Kyle, and, like, dare I say, I'm also saying Fred. Like, I know that sounds a bit weird, but, like, to me, like, not that I don't have confidence that Siakam can hit the shot. I certainly think he could. But in terms of, like, clutch moments, like, yes, you can reference, like, last year against the Phoenix Suns where Kawhi rested. Siakam had that nice layup to win the game. Sure, but that was against the Phoenix Suns still. Like, I'm thinking that in a clutch moment, I've seen Fred do it. I've seen Kyle Lowry do it. I haven't really reliably seen Siakam do it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for a Pascal Siakam to really jump into that next tier of, you know, the top 10, he needs to just get a little bit better on the offensive end. His defense is there. I think it's waned a little bit from last season, but that probably just has to do with, you know, his bigger load on the offensive end. I don't think he got worse as a defensive player. I just think the way that they use him is different than last year. And, you know, whether it's him getting to the rim more or drawing more fouls, right? And then that is able to spread him out even more at the three-point line, give him even more open shots if you're going to be scared to have him coming barreling down on you like maybe, you know, a Giannis Light would do, right? But with him right now and his shot selection not necessarily being at the point that you probably want it to be at this point with him being the number one guy, he is probably closer to not being in the top 10 than he is, you know, being in the top 10. And that's really for Pascal Siakam, I never thought we'd be having this conversation this year. So, like, as much as we're saying, you know, he's not in the top 10, this shouldn't be people shouldn't look at this as like a huge criticism towards him. We're not talking shit about Pascal Siakam. We love Pascal Siakam. I'm speaking for you here, but I
he's on his way. He's getting there. He's just
absolutely
not there.
Absolutely. And the crazy thing is that, you know, he really isn't that far from being a top 10 player. And I think that more so than us saying that he isn't a top 10 player, people should take away the fact that we're saying how close he is to that top 10 player. So, like, that's what I think is more important and is more impressive about this season than kind of anything else has been with him.
For sure.
So moving on to our last question in this true or false segment, Nick Nurse is already a top coach in the league. I don't know if you want to say maybe a top five, top three coach in the league. True or false, Adam?
Yeah, I'll put him in the top five. Yeah, I'll put him in the top five. Yes. Because, like, consider what he has to work with this year in comparison to last year. Like, yes, rookie coach winning a championship, but everyone's just going to lead on the notion that we had Kawhi Leonard on the team. So, okay, fine. Like, but now without him, given the fact that all these injuries that we've been talking about have, you know, been taking place, that he's been at a disadvantage, quote unquote, with his roster construction, rather. The fact that he's still more than keeping his head above water and more than treading water here, you got to figure that this is a result of coaching, that this is a result of scheming. This is a result of, you know, hours and hours of studying other teams and focusing on their weaknesses and, you know, trusting his players and building that chemistry and rapport and relationship with his players. Absolutely. Like, do I think he's better than a Spoelstra? No, I don't really. I'm not quite there, but I definitely think he's better than like a Brett Brown that people like to still harp on. I think he's better than a Vogel. I think he's better than a lot of these coaches that people like to lean on. So, I think he's definitely a top. I'll put him in the top five right now in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm there with you. And, like, I don't necessarily think that a Coach of the Year award is necessarily the most telling as to, like, who is the top ex-coach in the NBA. But Nick Nurse has to be right up there in the conversation for Coach of the Year, if not leading the discussion, just because of, like you said, what he's done with this team and how he's able to motivate guys and how he knows and how he builds the rapport with guys who, you know, aren't necessarily the top five on the team or the top seven on the team, and guys who have come in who are new with Ronde Hollis Jefferson and Terrence Davis and all the guys that we've talked about on this episode who have played really well and kind of been playing out of their heads. And I think this next half of the season, considering everyone is going to be healthy, knock on wood here, is that he's going to show off even more of his skills and even more of what he is capable of, just because, like I said in the part about the injuries, is that he's gonna experiment. He's going to try different things. He's going to try different lineups. We saw him pretty much bring the zone back into the NBA after last year's finals. And I think you should, you know, it's the same thing. Like, imitation is the highest form of flattery kind of thing. And that's, I think you can look at this and you can look at how teams are utilizing it and how other coaches, other, not just other coaches, but other really good coaches. You see Steve Kerr, he talked about them using the zone against the Houston Rockets. You saw Eric Spoelstra use the zone against the Toronto Raptors. And, you know, we just weren't able to beat it on that when we've talked about that earlier in the season. But, you know, his experimentation and him thinking on the top of his head and him being able to decipher maybe what's going wrong in the game, I think is one of the most telling things about what kind of a coach he is, and that it's so impressive. And you're right, he's not a Spoelstra, he's not a Popovich, you know, he's, but I think he should be considered up there with Brad Stevens and with, you know, the Nate McMillans of the world, just because he has been so good this year. And like the over exceeding expectations even more than anyone could imagine with the injuries. And even if there was no injuries and the Raptors had this record, you would look at it and say, wow, they're exceeding expectations. Nick Nurse is a damn good coach. But then you look at it and say, they've only played two or three games actually healthy. Nick Nurse is one of the best coaches in the league. I don't think you can look back on that or look past the fact that he's done what he has with the team that has been put out there.
Yeah, I agree. I would even put him ahead of a Brad Stevens, and that's not me with my anti-Celtics talk here. I legitimately believe that, because Brad Stevens has proven that he can lose a locker room. So far, Nick Nurse has proven anything but, right? Like, we've heard stories of how he likes to have this giant elephant and he puts it in the room. All right, let's get all our problems out. He seems to be like a player's coach while still maintaining that sort of authority figure, the saying like, I'm in charge here. Like, let me, you know, steer the ship. And that it's a really fine line to balance, and he does it very well. And I don't know that Brad Stevens has that presence, right? And I'm not saying he's not respected by his players, but he certainly isn't like an enforcer. He doesn't have that reinforcing voice to say like, I'm in charge. I feel like that. So given that comparison to between him and Brad Stevens, I certainly think Nick Nurse is ahead of the game there.
So it looks like we are ending this true or false edition on a bang. Nick Nurse, you're one of the best. Pascal Siakam, you're one of the best. The Raptors team is obviously one of the best thus far, and hopefully they can do such and continue to do such going through the second half of this season. So we'll be right back in just a moment talking about last week's games and looking forward. So we're back, and like we do every single week, we're going to talk about the weeks that happened, or the games that happened last week, and the games that are coming up. So this past week, the Toronto Raptors played the San Antonio Spurs on Sunday. Wednesday, Oklahoma City Thunder, which they won 130-121, and then they played the Washington Wizards on Friday, which was last night, and won 140-111. Adam, which out of those three games was your favorite to watch, whether it was because of entertainment value or it was a big win?
I know a lot of people want to say the DeMar game, because like obviously you're seeing DeMar and it's really fun to see that again, and people like to get emotionally attached to that, but I'm going to go with the OKC game, just because it was, you know, a test of fortitude on the Raptors' behalf, and plus against that OKC crowd. Like, that OKC crowd is underrated, pretty good and pretty loud, and it was a revenge game aspect that I think the Raptors totally capitalized on, and they close that out well, and it was sort of a nail biter. So I'm going to lean towards that game at OKC for sure.
Yeah, I like that game as well, but just to go against the grain here, I guess I'll do that the game in Washington last night, just because you always like seeing your team put up a big number, no matter whether it's against the Washington Wizards or if it's against the Milwaukee Bucks. You want to see them put up 140 points in the game, and that's something that you can really go back to and say, yeah, this is where they really kicked it into gear. And it's a good sign where, you know, Pascal Siakam doesn't have to play 30 minutes. He can play 25 or 27, whatever it was. And all the starters can play little amounts and still not have to come back in because of a late game push by the opposing team. So I like that one. Very entertaining. I was at the game on Sunday, and I probably should be saying that game, but like you said, I mean, you know, it wasn't as an exciting return for DeMar DeRozan as it was last season. So I'm going to go with the Wizards. And so going right into this next week. We'll start with tonight's game. They're going to be at Minnesota. Then on Monday, they're at Atlanta. Wednesday, they're at home playing the Philadelphia 76ers. And then Friday, they play the New York Knicks. Really only one tough matchup here. And even then, it's not exactly the worst because they don't have Joel Embiid with the Sixers. So how do you think the team fares this week? What's their record?
Let's go 4-0. Let's just 4-0? Do it. Let's just go 4-0. Yeah, man. Like, they're playing Minnesota tonight, and both teams are coming off a back-to-back, but the Raptors had their starters rest a little bit more. Not worried about the Atlanta game. I know it's an afternoon game because of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, but whatever. I still think they'll handle that. Philly, I'm not worried. Philly, like, without Embiid, as you mentioned, and, you know, yes, they've been playing pretty well without him, but still, I think the Raptors at home will take advantage of that, and we don't have to talk about the Knicks. I'm going 4-0.
Yeah, I'm going 4-0 as well. And out of those four games, which one are you most excited to watch?
You got to say the Philly game, just because of, like, the playoff aspect, them coming back again, and it's just, that's the most exciting, because, like, what team are you scared of, maybe, besides Philly out of these four? So, yeah, the Philly game, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And I also kind of want to throw in, you know, the Hawks and the Knicks, just because, probably more so the Hawks, just because the entertainment value is going to be there.
Yeah.
Trae Young is always a fun player to watch, and the Raptors are viable to put up 150 on the Hawks. And same thing with the Knicks, they could put up 150. And you know what? In fact, same thing with the Timberwolves. I think Karl-Anthony Towns is back, so that'll be fun to watch him go up against a Serge Ibaka and a Marcus Gasol. But you got to go with the Sixers in this one to see the Eastern Conference matchup they're likely going to face at some point, maybe in the playoffs if they get to the second round, or if, you know, maybe they meet up in the first round. So that'll do it for this episode of the Raptors Rapture podcast. As always, rate, review, subscribe, do whatever you can to go up and look at RaptorsRapture.com. We've got new content there every day after every game, grades, takeaways, all that fun stuff. And Adam, thank you so much for coming on. As always, at the end of every episode, you can plug yourself. What do you have going on right now?
Well, first of all, I have a thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hearing of course.
With you, Hunter, I appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter at South of the Six. That is 6IX at the end of it. That's how you spell it. I'm always tweeting out on Raptors game. Anytime there's breaking news, I'm always tweeting that out too. Random baseball stuff here and there. We don't really cover baseball anymore, but, you know, when it comes to Blue Jays baseball, we do that as well for all you Blue Jays fans out there. I'm sure there's some sort of cross-pollination. But yeah, you can hit me up on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast, South of the Six. Hunter was on last week's episode. You can revisit that if you want to. I have another episode dropping tomorrow as of this recording, so Sunday, if whenever this recording drops. But thanks again for having me on, man. It's always a pleasure.
Of course. And everyone, go and follow Adam. Great follow on Twitter. Great podcast to listen to. Always has great guests. Always talking Raptors, Blue Jays, for you Jays fans out there. So Adam, once again, thank you for coming on. And as always, at the end of every episode, go Raptors.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.